Ben Smith, I'm a photographer, and this is my podcast, A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. Thanks for listening. Hello people, how's it going? I hope you're doing okay. This is Ben. This is a Small Voice podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. If you are a regular listener, or any kind of listener, and you have not yet left a review over on iTunes, it's never too late to rectify that rather glaring oversight. Scooch over there to iTunes and do it, and I'll be eternally grateful. You don't have to write anything more than a sentence. And while you're at it, make sure you also subscribe, regardless of whether that's the method by which you actually listen to the thing. It all helps, apparently. What do I know? I just do the thing and hope for the best. Also, I do believe I promised a small-voiced T-shirt to the 50th reviewer. And given that there are currently 46 reviews, it might be a good opportunity. Small Voice T-shirt doesn't actually exist, but it will do, especially for that one person. So that is pretty exclusive. This week, I chat with street portraiture specialist, the brilliant and super nice Peter Zaleski. Before that, though, as is now customary, here's a bit of photo news. Call for entries to the 2016 Len Cultura Emerging Talent Awards, seeking 50 of the world's best emerging photographers. There is no age limit for entrance, so if you don't know whether you are still emerging or whether you've emerged, go to lensculture.com and see if you can establish from that if you are eligible to apply. If you have fully emerged, obviously, as always, go away, find a competition for people who are fully emerged. Yeah, I know, it's I just find it funny. What can I tell you? Lens Culture have also announced the winners, finalists and jurors' top picks in their 2016 Street Photography Awards. Check out that work also at lensculture.com, of course. There were categories for both series and single images. Some very strong stuff to be found there. Congratulations to those winners. Belgium artist Dieter de Lathauer has won the 2016 Unseen Dummy Award at the Unseen Festival in Amsterdam for I Love My Wife, brackets, Killing Children is Good for the Economy, close brackets, which will be published and presented during the 2017 Unseen Photo Fair. That sounds like an interesting project, which focuses on a period in Austrian history, during which thousands of people in state hospitals were apparently killed over a two-year period because they were Jewish, gay or immigrants, and which features found photographs, stills from propaganda films from German authorities and Lathauer's own images. I hope I pronounced his name right. If I haven't, then my apologies. Also on scene, the Austrian photographer Thomas Albdorf is the winner of the 2016 ING Unseen Talent Award, for which he will receive a €10,000 prize to fund a new project. So congratulations to both of those winners. So Peter Zaleski is a London-based portrait and documentary photographer. Born in Detroit, USA, he moved to London in the 1980s and studied graphic design and photography at the London College of Communication. And through his fascination with people and a love of the city, he was drawn to the streets of London to take photographs of its citizens, resulting in two award-winning projects, People of Soho and Beautiful Strangers. He divides his time between graphic design, commercial photography commissions, and his self-initiated portraiture projects. His work has been featured in numerous publications, including The Guardian, The Huffington Post, La Repubblica, and the Leica International Photography Magazine. In 2015, he was awarded third place in the prestigious Taylor Wessing Photographic Portrait Prize at the National Portrait Gallery in London for his image of Neckwith, which we talk about in the interview. And this year, three images from his twins project were selected for inclusion in the Royal Photographic Society's International Print Exhibition. His first book, People of London, is soon to be released by Hoxton Mini Press. That is due out in October 2016, so very soon. Look forward to that. Great photographer, top man. Here's Peter. How did your street portraiture workshop go? You did that recently?
Yes, fantastic.
Was it?
I mean, really, really well. So much better than expected.
Really?
First one I've ever done. So something I've been wanting to do for years since I got into street portraiture.
Yeah.
And with the National Portrait Gallery as well.
Yeah.
So it was, I've kind of held out. I've had a few offers before. Nothing's sort of come from them, but with them, it was great. And we kind of sold it out in about 2-3 days, which was wonderful.
That's awesome.
Had 14 people on it, plus two extra people came, and it was amazing 2 days.
So how did it happen? Did you suggest it to them?
I did, yeah. Right. Yeah, they were, you know, obviously because of the Taylor Wessing last year, they do a lot of workshops, and they've never done it. They've done a few kind of street photography workshops, but never a portraiture one.
Yeah.
And it's obviously the National Portrait Gallery. So I suggested, you know, how about a portraiture workshop, taking people out in the streets of Soho, Covent Garden, taking people out for the day, and they were thrilled by the idea. So I kind of set it up and put the whole schedule together, and they just kind of gave me the premises and a nice studio in the basement and had all the attendees there, and
that's perfect,
just took
it?
These people out, and their enthusiasm was insane.
Was it?
You know, from one guy from 17 to sort of 70, huge age range, but I couldn't believe the photos they came back with. I mean, we were all together, but the, you know, the enthusiasm on these guys was just insane.
Yeah. And they were mostly what, keen amateurs?
Yeah, mostly keen amateurs, yeah. Right. Almost, I would say all amateurs, just like how I was when I started. I think only maybe one or two had actually taken a street shot before, a portrait. So the 80% had never done a street portrait before.
Right.
You know, nervous as can be, and it was really great. And, you know, once they got into it, we worked kind of Bridal Lane the first day in Soho.
Yeah.
And they were just up and down the street, bringing people back. Once they saw how easy it could be done, you know, the enthusiasm was sky high. And the second day, we were in Covent Garden, worked between two streets there, and it was amazing. Yeah. And now we got a huge collection of images, and I've got emails from people saying it really just gave them something they never thought they could do. And you know, so it was really rewarding.
So that could be the start of something for you, couldn't it, doing workshops? It seems
yeah, I'd like to. I mean, it was an exhausting 2 days, but and it was nerve-wracking for me because it was my first one, but I absolutely loved it, and I got a lot of great feedback. They really felt they got something from it. So it's something I'll definitely be doing. Whether I do the gallery, I'm gonna do another one next spring, but I might do another one in between then. Awesome. Or whatever.
How do you go about kind of creating something like that from scratch? You sit down with a blank piece of paper and you say, how am I gonna do this? What am I gonna teach? How am I gonna teach it? Is that basically
I mean, I suppose that I've been to workshops myself in the past, so I think any workshop where people talk too much and it's too much, I think people want to get out there and do something. So I kind of limited it to an hour and a half each morning, talking, going through, you know, PowerPoint presentations, some slides, some history of street portraiture, techniques, lighting, my way, my sort of setup, how I work. And that really hit a note with them all. And then we just went straight out in the streets, and they were nervous, but as soon as they got into it, we just shot for about 3 or 4 hours. Then we went back into the studio, looked at the images, did the same the next day, and it was great. So it was a matter of, you know, just putting a schedule together. You know, discussing street portraiture, history of it, that sort of thing, and then just go out and shooting and doing that sort of hands-on approach. I made sure everybody was doing something.
And you were pleasantly surprised by the quality of what they ended up getting.
Absolutely. It was incredible. I mean, it was really, it was almost frightening. You know, you get these sort of feelings. Like, well, I actually said, I think when I put the schedule together, it was like, everybody's going to take one portrait today. You know, that was my goal for the weekend, somebody to at least get one portrait. They came back with at least 6-7 each, and it was incredible. And, you know, worked, they listened. You know, they were working with the colors, you know, working with colored backgrounds, working with the, you know, the sort of perspective and the communication thing. And they ignored all the, you know, all the stuff, you know, about editing and the stuff that doesn't really matter, but really worked on the communication thing. And like I said, one 70-year-old guy came back with a girl about 16 years old and photographing her against a wall, and it was incredible. You know, and I thought, wow, that's rewarding, you know.
But then the downside is you kind of suddenly realize, oh, maybe what I do isn't all that brilliant.
My wife said, oh, yeah, you better look at that, you know, these guys are pretty good, you better not give all your techniques out. You know, it's a technique. I think, you know, what I do is I've kind of pushed it on a bit from that, but it's you can't be like that. It's great just to show other people and say, you know, what I said to them was, you know, I've spent 3, 4, 5 years learning these techniques. I'm going to teach you things today, which, you know, all the mistakes I made, you don't have to go through that.
Exactly.
You know, I can save you 5 years and teach you the proper way to do it. So
absolutely.
That was great.
Yeah, that's really valuable. You know, what did you learn from doing it that you're going to kind of take to the next one? Any kind of lessons learned about, you know, what you should and shouldn't do with the workshop?
Again, I think it was a case of the first day, there was a few people who were a little bit timid and really didn't want to get out there. We were kind of working in groups, but I think it's really important for each of those people to get one portrait really quickly. They got to do it on their own. Once I found someone made a portrait of their own, did that communication thing, got that person to come back to the location with them, they were flying from then on. So I think initially it's get them out on the street really quick and get them taking portraits.
It's not easy really approaching strangers in the street. Even if you're very used to doing it, there's always that slight trepidation about doing that.
Absolutely.
That's the first thing to get over.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
And you know, I said to them, you know, I've been doing this years, but there's no reason when we go out today that I'm going to succeed. You know, the first thing I did was take the whole group out and found somebody in the street and said, can I take your portrait? And you can imagine if that person would have said no.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't. They said yes. And I think that showed them how easy it was.
Right.
And then from that point onwards, it was plain sailing.
Yeah. But, you know, did it take you out of your comfort zone to some extent by doing something that you'd never done before?
Yeah, and in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. I was going to say.
Because I spend every weekend going out my own shooting. I never shoot with other people. I'm always so focused. It's just on my own all the time. I've never worked with other people. I can't do it. I just have to have total concentration. But it was wonderful just to put away me for the day and concentrate on them.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunities myself to photograph a few people. But I just wasn't, it was like, that was about this, the 2 days was about them.
Mm.
So it was just great to sort of put the camera side and just throw all this experience at these people who are so hungry for it. And anybody who sort of goes to these workshops on a Saturday, Sunday and spends £150 or whatever, that's a big chunk of their time and money. So I wanted to make sure they really got something out of it. You know, I would have been so disappointed if somebody said, well, you know, I didn't photograph anyone or wasn't what I thought it was going to be. But the reception was incredible. Some saying it was the best, you know, workshop they've ever done, and just open up a whole new sort of photographic sort of genre for them, you know, getting into street portraiture.
Yeah.
And whether they're landscape or urban or whatever they do, a lot of them are candid street photographers. Now they have that little sort of thing where they can go up and speak to people and feel they've done it. So
right.
That's great.
Right. So you, last year you came third in the Taylor Wessing Portrait Prize. Mm. That's sort of what brought a lot of, what brought you to a lot of people's attention. I presume a lot of the people who did the workshop maybe knew you from having done that.
Yeah.
And it was, how do you pronounce the girl's name, Nioth?
It's Nickwith, actually.
Nickwith.
Nickwith, yeah. You would pronounce it N-I-C-K-W-E-T-H.
Okay.
So it looks like kind of Nioth and Nioth, but it's actually Nickwith. That's how you pronounce it.
Okay.
So I had to explain that at the workshop, and, you know, so people could, because we refer to the image a lot, but that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah. And, you know, were you quite overwhelmed by having won that? Did it come as a bit of a surprise?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I've been in awe of the award. I think that most people are. It's hard not to have respect for Taylor Wessing, although people slag it off all the time.
Sure.
You know, it's that love-hate relationship with it.
But we all go every year and go, it'd be nice to get something in here.
Exactly. And it's, you know, we all dream of it, and I dreamed of it, and it happened.
Yeah.
So, and then I also became a prize winner, which was just not, you know, shouldn't have happened, but it did. And it was insane.
I don't know. It's a great portrait.
Thank you.
There's something about it. It's hard to really say what, but I like it a lot. I saw the print at the print space. It was nice to see the print.
Right, okay, yeah.
You know, instead of just seeing it on the screen or whatever. Yeah. And I do love it. I think it's a cracker. Has it raised your profile in some way by winning or by being a prize winner on that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that's the reason I'm here now. You know, I mean, little things like this coming along.
Partly,
You know, constantly. It's been incredible. I think, you know, I didn't expect, what I really wanted out of it, I think anyone does, is exposure, really, and to, you know, just that kind of seal of approval from, I didn't expect to get commercial work. A lot of things I didn't expect, but they happened.
Mm.
And it, you know, it just puts you into another level, and it brought a lot of attention to my work, which was wonderful, because I had been doing this a long time, and I had a bit of a following, but it just kind of puts you onto another level. And I think that's the greatest thing about Taylor Wessing, is that you're just in this, to be in the National Portrait Gallery and to be on those walls, it's a feeling you just can't describe. And for anyone who slags the contest off, the competition, you know, I'll never have a bad word said about it. Well, maybe a few, but not too many. But, you know, it is amazing. And it's, for me, it's done all sorts of great things, so I couldn't be happier.
Well, I think the problem is that, you know, everyone's got an opinion about what should be, you know, what's any good and what isn't, and what should win and what shouldn't, and you know, what kind of criteria do they use, and you know, who cares, really? I mean, in a way, it is what it is, and they have different people judging it every time, so you never really know.
You know, who knows what they were thinking when they woke up that morning? You know, it's you know, there's a lot of luck on your side, I think, in these sort of competitions.
Yeah.
It's not like a running competition, who runs the fastest or who died. You know, it's personal taste.
Yeah, of course.
So you can't too, you know, argumentative about it.
It's,
and you know, why they liked mine, I have no idea, but they did, and that's enough for me. I'll take that with me.
Have you had any commissions as a result, or any you know, kind of tangible results in terms of jobs and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, photography, I'm not sort of motivated by sort of commercial work, or I'm a graphic designer by day. That's what I've been doing for 15 years now.
Yeah.
And the photography always came after that.
Mm.
So I'm in a kind of fortunate position where I can kind of balance the two. I can do my graphic design work, and then if I get commissions along the way, then that's great. If not, I don't have to take the ones just for money. So I had a lot of ridiculous offers. I mean, people were like, you know, I saw your image at Taylor Wessing. Will you shoot my wedding? You know, stuff like that. And it's, well, there's really no, you don't really need me to do that. You know? And I don't really want to do that. And then a lot of commissions for, I mean, software companies, you know, antivirus software, you know, where you go out and shoot street portraits, you know, and they didn't really grasp what I was doing. And things like that, I wasn't attracted to because I thought it's going to damage my portfolio. It's not really going to help me. I'm not going to learn anything from it. Do I really need the money that bad? No.
Yeah.
So it's a bit snobbish to act like that, but a lot of stuff was a bit ridiculous. On the other hand, there've been some interesting commissions, sort of more public sector type things where people wanted real people, something that's going on I can't talk about too much at the moment, but some really interesting things. Mm. And those are the things that I'm interested in doing that actually have some sort of kind of validation behind them and will actually, you know, yeah, a bit more credibility than just making money.
Yeah, and you know, it's nice that because you already, as you say, you've got another string to your bow. You've got the graphic design, which is your main bread and butter, so you don't have to worry too much. You know, you can pick and choose things.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you know, the port, the workshops, print sales, all these other things photographers do, I think, to survive, you know, is what I do.
Yeah.
It means I don't have to shoot weddings. And that's wonderful.
Sure, yeah. Yeah,
just although, like a wedding photographer, so.
Yeah, you know, that's not a bad, you know, it's not a bad revenue stream.
No, if it's just not for me.
No, exactly. You got to do what makes sense for you.
Exactly.
So you haven't really bothered to, you don't really have the need to go and hustle for extra work.
No, like I said, I think I want to concentrate on my project work. I've got a book coming out shortly. Things like that are really time consuming. It's great I can put my time into that without having to, like I said, do corporate portraits or whatever else.
So tell me about the book. Is that going to be your Beautiful Strangers
It's with Hoxton Mini Press.
Right.
And the book is called People of London.
Yep.
And it's going to be, it's about 200 pages, 100 portraits, People of London, kind of Beautiful Strangers and my Soho project combined.
Put together, yeah.
And about 40 to 50 more images that I've shot since then. And it's going to have about 50 quotes to it, foreword, which I've written, and beautiful hardback book. So
great.
I'm really, really excited about that. It's been a lot of hard work on it, but where it's going off to print in about 4 weeks, no, about 2-3 weeks' time.
Awesome.
So we're getting there.
I think Hoxton Mini Press is a great thing.
Yeah. I was so thrilled and honored. Like I said, you know, Taylor Wessing, a lot of people expect, you know, commercial assignments from, but for me to get the offer from Hoxton, you know, a publishing company I've admired for so many years, inspired me. to do my book. It was absolutely wonderful. And they're photographers, they're, you know, curators, they're passionate, and they've worked with me, you know, from beginning right up to this point, and will continue to work to make it wonderful. They're as passionate about it as I am.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think you get that often, and they're unique in that way.
So did they come to you?
They did, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
that's,
you know,
great.
The sort of email, we you know, sort of thing, we love your work. And it was great because they're quite old school. You know, they said, we saw your work, we really love it. Would you come and meet us? And that was it. And I thought, well, they were the first person besides you to see me face to face. And I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, went to their offices.
So that's Martin Osborne.
That's it, yeah. And then Martin and Ann, who run the company.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know it at the time. I expected some, you know, 20 people in this big office. And it is just literally those two, an assistant, Ruth, and two dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And books everywhere. And it reminds me of like the old kind of independent punk rock record labels of the 70s and 80s. You know, these just people passionate about something and trying to get it out there.
Yeah, doing their own thing.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to Martin, but I did contact him. And because of what you've just outlined, he literally, his whole life is just, I mean, he's completely slammed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he very politely declined on the grounds that he just couldn't possibly find the time. Yeah. And you can imagine,
he's being sincere too, as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, being a photographer, you know, can be pretty full time gig, and running an imprint. So he's trying to do both.
Yeah. He just emailed me this morning from, they're on holiday, but I'm getting emails every day, and he's supposed to be on holiday in the States. His wife's American, and it's he doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
But it's that passion. They make great products, and they've only been around a short time as well. I think they got a great future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I want to ask you about Nyquist, I think, the picture. You know, it's by no means the only image in that set, as anyone who goes to your website will see. There's lots of them. But how did it become a project, as it were? You started doing the Soho people first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then Beautiful Strangers came out of that.
Yeah. I think it started, my whole street portraiture thing started with People of Soho.
Yeah.
And I worked on that for maybe 2-3 years. It was my first project. And the thing that really, I was kind of learning through that. And I think when you get through your first kind of real project, you then kind of step back and think, well, what do I want to do with my next project? And as much as I like the Soho project, I always felt it had a bit of a fashion kind of vibe to it. It had a very stylized look to it, which wasn't intentional, but it just kind of happened because of the area. But I always really liked the images that were kind of a bit more real, the kind of real people, the ones that weren't over-edited, just kind of natural people who looked really interesting. So the Beautiful Strangers thing happened because I thought, well, I just want to put something together, just kind of real Londoners, not confined to one area, just real people, but make them look really spectacular. So take somebody quite normal who has something really interesting about him and make him look really cool, like a great photograph. So that was the idea behind it.
And
Nick was the first one from the project. And
oh, really? I didn't know that. So yeah, she was literally the first person.
Well, it was what I was when I was at doing the print space talks a couple of weeks back. I was talking about how I put the project together in December 2015, and as most photographers, as I'm sure you know, when you put a project, you get an idea for a project, you hit the streets or whatever, and you know, me 5 weeks into it, I hadn't taken one photograph. This great idea for this project, but I couldn't find anyone who kind of represented what I really wanted to do with it.
Right.
And I was about to give up after sort of 5 weeks of trolling the streets until I spotted her.
Right.
And that was on a Sunday kind of afternoon, and it was just, you know, your heart starts beating again. That's the one.
Yeah.
You know, within seconds, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask you. Like, when you saw her, what was it about, you know, just...
I mean, I think she just represents to me what... I just loved her natural beauty and her. She's about 6 foot tall, really thin, just cruising down Oxford Street.
She's not a model though.
Not a model, no. Just a normal, everyday person, but just has these incredible looks. And not in an overly fashionable way at the time. I mean, what she's wearing is just a white turtleneck and a cream jacket. That's what, you know, she's wearing on the day. Nothing, you know, over the top, but just looked amazing. And that's that sort of look that that I was going for. You know, she wasn't a model, but she looked stunning. Kind of as a lot of Londoners do. And they just kind of sometimes... mix into the crowd, but she stood out a mile, and you know, I had to photograph her. There was no doubt about it. And once I had that photograph, the whole project just unfolded. It was perfect. You had something to work from.
The thing I like about that is that I kind of collecting little stories of it, whereby, you know, you've kind of been rewarded by the muse somehow for your persistence, because 5 weeks of shooting nothing, that can easily be enough to make you go, you know what, fuck it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And then there she was, right?
Yeah.
So, you know. Nice thing.
I was listening to your podcast with Neil McDermott, the other street portraiture photographer, the other one, you know, that Neil. And, you know, he talked about this. I felt exactly what he was talking about, is the days that you're out there, you know, fourth, fifth week in a row. Why am I doing that? What? Why am I doing, you know, you're not getting paid for it. You know, you're not taking any photos. And it's like, it's just this thing inside you that means you just have to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it all fell apart tomorrow, I'd still be out doing it again. You know, this isn't about money. It's about passion for it.
And
like you said, the reward is, it was Nickwith.
Yeah.
And if you try hard enough, you get something like that. And it's,
absolutely,
it's
yeah.
worth every minute.
Patience and all that. Yeah. But so when you, it was fairly obvious even then that it was going to be quite a special pick. Because you just had what you were looking for somehow.
And then it was just making it happen. Which is the hard part.
Imagine if she said no. Yeah. That would have been.
Well, I mean, the story behind it, you know, I could probably talk for hours about it because it went on for hours. But you know, I saw her on the street, and it, you know, she, like I said, it, after 5 weeks and seeing this amazing person, was like, that was the picture. And this was busy Oxford Street, zillions of people around, no good backdrops anywhere. I had to get her to one of my backdrops even before I could approach her. I've been used to working in the area, so I knew a lot of good streets where she'd fit in, and she had all this cream on, you know, the dark skin, the cream, and I thought, I want a really neutral background, don't want any graffiti, just a really neutral background. She kept walking and walking and going in shops, and you know, I was walking and stalking, and you know, I was hanging around. I thought, I can't give up on this. After a long time, she eventually made her way towards Tottenham Court Road and almost went into the tube station to go. And if at that point, I would have just blown it. And I couldn't have asked her for the picture because it wouldn't have been what I wanted. And then she went right to a location that I've used before, just off Denmark Street, right near it. And that was the that was when it all came. You know, I thought,
okay,
this is
great.
It. I got to approach her. So I did. And I pretty much said to her, you know, you're the most incredible human being I've ever seen. I said, I've been following you. I need to take your photograph. And I said, if you give me 3 minutes of your time, I'll make a photograph you'll never forget. Something really ridiculous like that. And she just kind of looked at me stunned and said, okay, do it. And she said, I only got 3 minutes, so can we be quick?
Yeah.
And we went down this little alley. And because I've been, you know, looking at her for so long, I knew exactly how I wanted her to take this shot. Just placed her in the alley. And she said, well, what do you want me to do? And I said, just give me the exact look you had when you were walking down Oxford Street. So it was just really stern. There was no posing. Straight on. It's just click, click. Third frame, kind of looking in the camera. That was the shot. I thought, I'll just safeguard myself in case it's out of focus, because I use manual focus. And five more shots. And that was it. Gave her my card. And I had the shot. Went to a coffee shop, looked in the camera and thought, this is special. So it was great.
That's great. And what does she think of it? I mean, you did kind of deliver on your promise there.
I did, exactly. Yeah.
And did she like it?
She's quite a shy person, which was at first when I wrote to her with the pictures, the images I sent him, because I gave her my card. She emailed me, oh, you know, you took my picture. Can I see some of them? So I sent the pictures on to her, and she liked him, said, great, nice to meet you. And that was about it. Then 6 months later, when the Taylor Wessing happened, I had to get her permission, and thank God I had her email address. And, and Taylor Weston were a bit concerned about her age, so I had to write to her and say, "Are you, you know, are you definitely 21, 18? You had to be at least 18. Are you definitely 18? I've just won this major competition, or I'm in this major photographing exhibition." And she was like, "Yeah, I'm 18, and yeah, you can use it, and best of luck with that." No enthusiasm whatsoever until months later when it all started unfolding, and it was in the Guardian newspaper in their kind of eyewitness series. And her, because I ran into her later, and she said her. Her friend's mother was down at breakfast, and they kind of opened the newspaper, and there she was in the Guardian. And then she started realizing it was something special.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when the awards happened, and she came afterwards, and you know, she's wonderful. And I think the last thing she said to me when I met her was like, "I'm so grateful to have met you that day. I was so lucky." You know, that was really lovely. So
yeah,
you know,
that's lovely, isn't it?
Two people, lives kind of changed through photography. Yeah. So you can't argue with that.
No, absolutely. So when you approach, what's your general kind of approach then? Do you get any weird reactions or extreme reactions? Presumably some people, it being London, think you're a nutter.
Yeah.
Other people just take it completely at face value.
Yeah, I mean, it's really odd. I think in central London, it's a lot easier, you know, doing, you know, photography in Soho and Covent Garden. And, you know, people are used to being photographed. So as I was saying in my workshop, there's a lot of people you know that are going to say yes. They're used to being photographed with social media, whatever, that, you know, that happens. But the ones I'm approaching nowadays, especially for the book, are going for older people and people who aren't used to being photographed. And they're the more difficult ones. Mm. And they're very suspicious, you know, why do you want to do it? Where are you going to put it? And I'm usually just really honest with them. And same thing I said at my workshop is just go up to people and be honest. And usually say, if it's something you like about them, tell them.
Yeah.
If you like the shirt they're wearing, or if you like the way they're standing, or, you know, I think people react, you know, really good to positive energy and compliments and honesty. And nine times out of 10, they say, yes, you'd be surprised. And
yeah.
I think the most surprising thing is the way I work is I'll see somebody and say, can you come to a location with me, you know, to match the background. And, you know, people have walked 5-10 minutes and that's incredible, you know, so.
Yeah, because everyone's normally so busy with their own shit.
Absolutely. But the reaction, the people you think are going to be overwhelmed with it sometimes aren't. And the people who are really quiet are the ones that are literally you can have the entire day with them.
So it is
amazing. Yeah, it is amazing.
So this compositional technique that's become a kind of signature for you, whereby the kind of converging walls of an alleyway in the background kind of serve to focus attention on the subject in the foreground.
Mm.
This is sort of something that you borrowed from your graphic design background in a way. Is that basically
in
right?
In a way, yeah. I mean, it comes from that kind of Stanley Kubrick sort of, you know, one-point perspective thing, which I learned through design, composition, you know, design, composition. When I got into photography, it was all, you know, rule of thirds. I kept reading books about this rule of thirds thing, which I tried, and it just came across really dull, you know, the person over here. And it seems so construct, so organized. And, you know, I started getting into that one-point perspective thing, and it really out of necessity.
Yeah.
You know, if I was shooting in, say, Carnaby Street or Soho or somewhere, there'd be tons of people around. So I'd say to somebody, can you step over to this little alleyway? There's nobody around. We can take the portrait here. And I found it was less kind of confrontational when you weren't asking somebody to go up against a wall. You know, they had that free space behind them. They kind of relaxed a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the light was wonderful. So it was all these factors. That, you know, the light was incredible. You get this light on the face, but the walls would stop any overexposure.
Yeah.
They didn't feel confronted by it because there was all this space in between them. You had that kind of airy feeling going on with the sort of, you know, and it just, for all those reasons, just, and it looked really kind of dynamic, really kind of striking.
Mm.
I wanted the portraits to be really strong. I didn't want them to be just snapshots.
Yeah.
A lot of people do that style of street portraiture and it's great, but I just wanted really striking head-on portraits. So,
and it also brings them together as a kind of
a set
because it gives you this kind of consistency within the composition.
And I think that's my design background again. I mean, you know, looking at I wanted my portfolio to look like it was part of one thing.
Mm.
I didn't want, I know a lot of photographers, you know, no disrespect, but have a lot of, you know, landscape, street photography, portraits. I wanted everything to look like it belonged together.
Yeah.
Each series looked like they could stand on their own. Like they looked like they came from me. So that was a great thing when that started happening and people started recognizing my work and go, that's a Pete Selesky shot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm just ignorant, but I had never come across that terminology, one point perspective,
right?
Form.
Yeah.
Well, probably all my listeners are going, nah, it's bloody basic, mate. It's fucking photography 101, one point perspective.
Go.
I'm sorry, but I have no idea. I've never heard of it, but it's brilliant. But that's a Kubrick thing, is it?
Yeah, if you look at all the Kubrick films, I mean, it's wonderful. Those, the twins in the hallway and all those, it's all right down. And we're told, you know, composition is all about, you know, pleasing and to be, you know, but one point perspective is not pleasing. It makes the viewer feel uncomfortable and a bit uneasy. But I love that because, I mean, you look at the Nickwith picture and, you know, it's just her face and it's not a, I wouldn't say it's not a pleasant image, but it is, you know, it does make you kind of stand back and look at it. And a lot of my stuff does that. And that's why.
Well, it's part of what gives it the power, I think.
It gives it the power, exactly. Yeah. It gives them that kind of, you know, heroic sort of, you know, powerful look to them. So,
yeah. And what are you looking for in your subjects then? Is there something specific? Or is it hard to articulate?
I think it's just that real, and it's been the same really since, well, almost since Beautiful Strangers started, which is that little something special.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just, you know, even walking around here today, just looking at people, always looking at people for that little, you know, like Nickwith, and, you know, you can look at all the pictures and there's always something a little special about them where they're, you know, not overly fashionable, not overly stylish, but the way their eyes or their hair or even just, you know, some coordination with what they're wearing or just an expression. Mm. You know, it's what makes humans interesting.
Yeah.
And I worked with kind of models in my early days through my design. And, you know, it was incredible the way a model would, you know, you choose a model on the book, blonde hair, blue eyes, this shape. They'd come in, they would do what you wanted to do. But the whole thing was so dull.
Mm.
Whereas the real people thing is when it gets exciting. Yeah, someone might have a limp or their eye might be lower than the other one. They might have a bit of a chin. But that's where you get the beauty from. And that's what excites me.
Yeah. Mm. And then you've also turned, you know, the same technique towards a project with twins now as well.
Yes.
Which is, what is it about twins that is so fascinating? I never get, I was talking to Maya Daniels about this because she obviously photographs the Parisian women, Manny and Manette. And there's something, it just never ceases to...
I don't know if it's photographers. Yeah. Like,
these people are genetically identical, okay? Oh, is that all? They're just genetically, you know, it's just so special. How did the twins thing come about?
I think it happened because the Beautiful Strangers thing was fine. I had coming towards the end of that with the book. And up to that point, I'd always photographed single people, a person on their own. And I thought, well, I want to kind of build on this, do something a little bit different. And I started experimenting with couples. And the balance, maybe it's my OCD, I'm not quite sure, but the balance just wasn't right. You know, someone looked good, the other person didn't. And then I came across these twins, Callum and Max, one day in Camden Town. And they were two kind of little footballers, football jerseys, identical twins, raging around, just acting like total hooligans. And I just, that's him, look at those two, if I could photograph them. So I went up to their mother and just said, you know, I explained to her, I'm a photographer, my Taylor Wessing at the time, I showed her that. She said, yeah, photograph them. So that was my first twin shot.
Right.
And it was wonderful. And it just kind of, it was completely different from normal single portrait, you know, getting to, you know, getting the depth of field was much more difficult and getting them lined up and getting them to act, you know, the balance, the whole thing was wonderful. And that was the first one. And then I think, and it was quite incredible that I found them on this, you know, as a street portrait. Mm. And then I started looking out and I was amazed by how many twins I was seeing on the street. Because most people do it through calling people up or friends of whoever. And it just started happening. And once a month, I seemed to find another set of twins. And then I'd see a couple and I'd meet somebody and they would come back and do it the next day. And I've got about sort of six, or about seven or eight now, I think, in my collection after a couple months.
That's amazing. And,
it is amazing. Well, I'm amazed by it.
Yeah.
And,
but sometimes they dress the same deliberately.
Well, I think a lot of photographers will do it. They'll demand that they dress exactly the same. And that gets a bit, I think that's a bit rude in a way.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like them to look the same. If they do it, that's fine. If they don't want to dress identical. But there is this interesting connection that they tend to wear even the same colors. Or it's an amazing sort of the telepathy between them. And it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially since I'm so used to doing kind of people on their own.
Yeah.
So I think we're all excited or, you know, about twins, especially photographers. So I'm going to continue it and keep on building on the collection.
So let's do the kind of origin story. You grew up in Detroit, right?
I did, yeah. Motown.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Motown. What was that like?
Interesting.
What memories do you have of that?
I mean, you know, Detroit's an amazing place, you know, for all the right and wrong reasons. You know, it's, you know, I grew up when I didn't know anything else as you are when you're a kid. You grew up in I grew up in the 60s. I was born in 64. You know, the town was burning down by 66. It was, you know, there was race riots. The car industry bottomed out. It was tough times. And we were living right in downtown Detroit.
Right. So the car industry was already on the decline at that point. I would have thought that was almost the peak of it.
Well, 50s it was peaking. Right. They knew in the 50s it was dying. Right. I think by the time the 60s happened, that's when it really started with the riots. It's the two together, as it does when a city only can survive on sort of one industry. It bottomed out, the city fell apart, and people moved out. Mm. White flies, they call it. People moved to the suburbs, including our family. So we grew up in Detroit. things happened, we moved to the suburbs, and like many other people did. And so, you know, you're in your teens or your younger years in a city, and the next minute you're in some really sterile suburb. And it was kind of culture shock.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that comes, I don't know, interest. You know, you get interested in other things, and, you know, things start happening. So maybe it was for the best.
Mm. But your dad was into photography, right?
Yeah, yeah, he was. And that's how I got into it. He was an amateur photographer, but loved photography, like a lot of our fathers do. You know, yeah. And I think as we grow up, he had cameras around the house all the time. He was always taking pictures. And, you know, he worked Monday to Friday, but the weekends were his time with his cameras. And so I kind of always associated the camera with something of fun, something of joy, something that brought him happiness. Mm. And I used to go out with him. He used to, you know, go in the car, go into Detroit. He'd give me a little camera. He'd have his nice big 35 millimeter and just take pictures. It was film days back then, so I couldn't snap too much, but it kind of gets into your blood, I think.
Yeah.
And it kind of stayed with me throughout my whole life, whether I was doing design or whatever. There was always a camera about.
Mm. Mm. And he was going in the street and shooting some of this quite documentary stuff for an amateur.
Yeah, in those days, it wasn't, you know.
He wasn't photographing, you know, flowers in the garden.
No. He'd go and, you know, the ruins, you know, he'd go through downtown and take pictures of all sorts of things. You know, it's an amazing city to be a photographer in. You know, when I go back on holiday, you know, you visit family, I can't wait to go back downtown and just, you know, compared to London, that's so many people. You go to Detroit, there's just wastelands of nothing, all this empty space and buildings, and it's an incredible place.
Mm.
So, you know, that was just his backyard, and he would go out and shoot buildings, and he would meet people as well, just taps him on the shoulder, can I take your picture in front of that building? And, you know, he had a huge collection of photographs. Mm. But, you know, it was that sort of, yeah, that communication thing. You know, he was a really nice man and could speak to anybody. People got on with him.
Yeah.
And kind of, I think that kind of rubbed off on me.
What did you learn from him then? Did he teach you some important
lighting, lesson? I think, you know, lighting and composition and again, approaching people and, you know, all those things that you don't really know at the time. It wasn't like he said, do this, do that. But, you know, he'd look at my pictures and say, well, you know, try doing this or try doing that. And, you know, and you listen to him because, you know, you got respect for him.
Yeah, of course.
So, I think a lot of his... There was a massive influence there as a youngster.
Mm.
So that's great.
Mm. Is he still around?
He died now 2 years ago, sadly. Oh. Yeah, right before, a couple years before Taylor Wessing, which is a shame. But he saw a bit of my success with photography.
You know, he saw at least that you know.
Yeah,
that
yeah. And he saw those in magazines and, you know, so that was great. You know, I think that was amazing for him. So you can't ask for more than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. So, and then like punk rock came along. That was quite a big influence on you. How so?
Well, I mean, it changed everything. You know, I mean, it was, you know, like I said.
Because like we're very similar age. You're a year older than me. So we're almost exactly.
Seriously?
Yeah.
God, you're doing better than I am. I wish I had your hair.
Well, the hair's just, that's a genetic fait accompli. I can thank my old man for that.
Yeah, there you go. I got the photography, you got the hair.
Yeah, there's nothing much, you know, that I can take credit for. What happened with the punk thing?
Well, I think growing up in Detroit was great. That was, you know, sort of, it was exciting. It was a city I was living in. But then we moved to a suburb 3-4 miles outside Detroit. And one second I was in a normal kind of Detroit school. And then I was in a really rich suburb with rich kids everywhere driving Porsches at school. And we were kind of, the poor family that just entered town. And this kind of rebel thing, I think, happens. You know, you all of a sudden, and I don't want to be part of that world. I don't want to be part of this world. And, you know, through sort of skateboarding at the age of 14, the music comes along. And I think in those days, that kind of defined who you were.
Yeah.
And my mother's English. I had some cousins come over from London one summer and, you know, taught me about the Pistols and the Clash and the Ruts and all these great bands. And, you know, that was the moment that it all changed. And, you know, as soon as I got Nevermind the Bollocks, put it on the turntable and there was no going back. You know, all of a sudden, this is what I want to do. And it was great because it was so exciting at the time, that whole kind of DIY thing. You know, you could do it yourself.
Yeah.
You could start a fanzine. You had to. That was expected. You formed a band. You did a fanzine. I got into photography. I started taking my own pictures, developing my own pictures. I was in a band. I was 17, kind of touring around the States. And, you know, it was very exciting.
So is that DIY ethos whereby it just taught you that you can just go and do something? You don't need permission from anyone.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, even up to this point, to Taylor Wessing or to the, you know, I got into photography again, kind of reacquainted with it at kind of 45 years old. And, you know, by rights, I shouldn't have been in with the people that are doing it. You know, I mean, it's like, that's not really the age you get into it. And, but it didn't kind of stop me from entering Taylor Wessing for doing whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're passionate about it, you can do it. Mm. And that's what the guys at my workshop last week, 70 years old, still doing it. And I just tried to instill that into them, that it doesn't really matter. If you really want it, if you really want to do it, you can.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You didn't
go to, also, you know, you do it when the time is right, kind of thing. And you can bring a whole load of just life experience too, I suppose. I mean, so you've only really been shooting for 4 or 5 years.
It's about, I'm 52 now, about 44, 45. I really got into it. So six, seven years. And, you know, I concentrated on graphic design. I thought that was it all my life. That was my career. And I kind of stayed away from getting back into photography because I know what I'm like. Once I get into something, it's just 100 zillion percent. Yeah. And I knew kind of I didn't want to jeopardize my graphic design career through photography. And I felt it was the right time at that age to sort of get a camera and start shooting. But once I got into it, it was nonstop.
Why do you think you ended up as a graphic designer, even though you were doing the photography from an early age? How come you didn't pursue it? Is there something?
I think it's... In those days, it was film. So, you know, my dad built me a darkroom in the basement of our house. I was, you know, in bands. I'd come home at night, midnight, developing film down under the stairs. And it was all about developing. It was all about having a darkroom. When I moved to London in 86, I was living in a studio flat, no darkroom. And I had a camera, but I was, you know, getting it processed at the lab or whatever. And it just didn't have the same sort of excitement. It wasn't like you were doing the whole thing yourself. And I thought, well,
yeah, so it was about the magic of the darkroom in a way.
Yeah, that was
I had the same conversation earlier with Jocelyn Bain Hogg, who I spoke to, and yeah, it seems a very familiar pattern that you know, the taking the pictures is great, but it's really the processing and the printing that kind of captures your imagination.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, just locking yourself away, you know, with a roll of film and just, you know, watching the picture unfold in front of your eyes. Yeah. It's not the same taking it to a lab and having someone hand you back a packet with 12 prints in it. Mm. So I think I followed the creative path, and it was either, you know, I was doing a fanzine at the time. I loved typography, and I loved all that early, or those early magazines like The Face and ID and Blitz. That was big influence, and I thought, well, graphic design's cool, I'll get into that, and you know, imagery is an important part of graphic design, so I can use my photography and go in that direction. And I think in those days it was harder, you know, you know career in photography wasn't as easy. No, I wouldn't say it wasn't as easy, but it wasn't guaranteed. And I thought, well, maybe graphic design might be a bit, I might have more success in that.
Yeah,
and
that's what I did. Slightly more stable.
Yeah, and I think that's proven correct, because now I can financially survive with the design, and I can do my photography. Yeah. So absolutely no regrets.
No, absolutely. It's perfect in a way. Mm. So what kind of photographic influences did you have, you know, in the early stages? Were there any particular photo books or people?
Yeah, I mean, I think punk is when, like I said, it really started. That's the visual thing started happening, because I loved the music, but the visual was just as important. So it was all those early fanzines that we used to get from London, Sniffing Glue, and all, and my cousin used to send them to me, and it was all the black and white stuff. That was great. But then the I think it's a British subculture thing, you know, the skinheads, that's Nick Knight, that skinheads book, the guy you had, Ted's book, Steel Perkins.
Yeah, Chris Steel Perkins.
Yeah, I had that book, 1980, and it was just threadbare through just going through it, looking at that book. Those kind of subculture books, and the early ID magazine, you know, the first issue when it was people on the street, you know, dressed in clothes from Kensington Market and shoes from a robot. That was the first kind of street portraiture stuff. And I had all those. I used to travel miles to buy those magazines and just page through them. Like I said, the music was great. I had the music, but I used to have the magazines as well. So it was kind of, again, that DIY, take a camera out in the street and photograph your friends.
Yeah.
I used to photograph bands and concerts, but I actually got more enjoyment out of photographing the bands afterwards behind the club or their friends or their supporters or that sort of thing.
So what made you come to London? You were only, what, 17 or something when you...
I was 20 by the time I came 20. To London. Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, right. 70...
when did I come?
Was it 86, you
86,
said.
Yeah, 86. So somewhere around there, 18, 20.
So you came, you came on your own?
Or, it was...
What was the plan then?
Well, I think it was like Detroit at the time. I mean, Detroit is quite cool now. You know, everyone knows Detroit, but in 1983 to 86, it was, you know, it was bad times. There wasn't a lot happening. And the British thing was always there through my mother, who was born here. My cousins lived here, and I was fascinated by the music.
Right.
So I thought, well, you know, come over to London and see what happens. Mm. And I did, and stayed. I just loved it. You know, as soon as I came, you know, people kind of slag off the 80s and that, but I thought it was a really exciting time to be in London.
Yeah.
You know, Soho, Old Compton Street, the whole thing. It was a great time. It was a very creative time as well. A lot of great designers happening, art, photography. It was exciting.
Yeah.
From Detroit, it was amazing. So,
I mean, I was going to say that I like the fact that I think you kind of alluded to it, but you've stuck with one thing, as it were, in a way. You know, when you go to your website, it's just, this is what I'm doing kind of thing. And you're not in a big hurry to sort of necessarily move away from it. You're just kind of almost perfecting that thing. Is that a conscious decision almost.
I think definitely, yeah. I mean, I think the beauty of the position I'm in is that I don't have to work to a brief. I don't have to work to a career. I can do what I want, really, and I quite enjoy that. Each of my series, People of Soho and Beautiful Strangers, there's 25 images in each, and there'll never be more, even though I've shot a couple hundred of each. You know, the 25, the best are there, and that's it. I think it's less is more. It's better to show less, and people get a taste for what I do, and it looks good, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And I don't have to rush. I'm in no hurry to, you know, I've got plenty of time left. So I'm just going to keep shooting, keep enjoying it, and keep, you know, taking advantage of opportunities.
Well, 'cause, I mean, I guess, you know, on one hand, one doesn't want to be pigeonhole, but on the other hand, it's quite useful, especially for getting commissioned and stuff, to be that's the guy who does.
Yeah,
like, they're not going to go, well, we need a landscape. Let's call Peter. Right,
yeah,
that's not going to happen.
Yeah, this is what I do. You know, kind of take it or leave it.
Yeah.
And I think through Taylor Wessing, the great thing, I think a lot of people get into Taylor Wessing with maybe an abstract shot or one that people don't expect from them. But with me, literally people saw that shot and then went to my website and saw many more like it. And it's pretty much that's what he does. If we want to hire this guy, this is what he's going to do for us.
Mm.
So that's good enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So photo books, what do you have a particular favorite then?
Well, like I said, I think it's those subculture photo books from the 70s and 80s.
Right.
That Skinheads book by Nick Knight. Again, they were just such a big influence on me, you know, because this is pre-internet days when you couldn't see this stuff. And to get a copy of those sort of things and to see what was happening in Britain was incredible.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that always stick by me. But I've since got into a lot of the greats. And, you know, you pick photo books up along the way. Eccleston, I mean, I was at the exhibition last week and, you know, picked up a photo book. And it's just, you know, I've kind of got into the history of photography kind of backwards. Instead of studying it from the start, kind of getting into photography and then going back to where it started. And that's really exciting. And I get a lot of influence from a lot of the greats.
Yeah,
as well as a lot of the contemporaries now as well.
Have you discovered anyone recently who, you know, maybe is new to you, who you've just come across?
Someone new or older?
Either.
I think new. I mean, I tend to look more towards new photographers.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a host of them out there. People you're interviewing all the time, and you would never see their influence in my work, but it's definitely there. You know, Neil McDermott, I think I've discovered his work about a year, 2 years ago. And just to see, I love the way he worked with ordinary people.
Mm.
You know, at the time I was doing Soho, and it was kind of fashionable, but he was doing stuff in Woking and you know, all these remote suburbs and doing these really normal photography that just looked amazing with color. And that had a big influence on me. And then even people like, you know, Spencer Murphy, his work, you know, it just real, you'd never see an influence from, you know, in mine, but it's a lot of just the sort of desaturated colors and, you know, the fine art. A lot of the fine art photographers I absolutely love. Although mine isn't fine art, I get a lot of influence from that recently. And Jack Latham, another one who I discovered, I met at Taylor Wessing last year, just does wonderful work. And, you know, I think when you get to this stage, you have your own style, but you sort of pick up on other things that are going on and just take bits and pieces from that and bring it back to your own, as opposed to trying to copy somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's
the important thing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an important trick to, you know, how do you be influenced by someone and yet still be original at the same time?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is to that.
But I think you need those influences to keep going. You need to, I mean, to keep getting excited about photography. And there's always somebody new around the corner. There's always, you know, you turn the page or you go onto another internet site and there's somebody doing something amazing. And you get excited by it. And you think, well, what can I do? What can I take from that I can bring to my own?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's opening up your perspective or, you know, whatever. That's what keeps you going. That's what keeps me going. It keeps me kind of excited and passionate about it.
What do you think you've learned about yourself by doing the photography? It's only, like you say, it's only 7 years. Of, you know, you've had a whole, you know, a pretty decent chunk of time you've spent in another career. But what's the photography taught you?
I think a lot to do is a lot of communication about people. I think, you know, the longer I'm in it, the more I realize it's so less about technical equipment, about technique. You know, I really honestly believe if there was a way that we could take these pictures without this piece of metal in our hands, we'd be so much better. You know, I think it's especially in portraiture. And it's, again, another thing I taught at my workshop is just talking to people and getting to and trying to read people. And I think that's what the experience does, is reading people. You know exactly who to approach on the street, how they're going to react. And it's wonderful hearing stories and hearing about people, and which I don't think you get if you're a landscape photographer.
No.
And I think that's a beautiful part of it.
Also, I think there's something about that we live in these big impersonal cities and spend most of the time ignoring each other,
yeah, yeah.
even though you're in incredibly close proximity.
Really close.
So you have an excuse to just literally go up to random people, not entirely random people, but because you choose them for a very specific reason. But you're then having conversation with a stranger. There's something very kind of nourishing about that somehow.
Definitely. And I think in these times, I mean, it's been a pretty miserable year. And, you know, we're living in times where maybe people aren't as friendly as they should be. And I think it's still amazing. And again, all the people in my workshop said it, that people are just so kind. And that's wonderful that people will say, yes, I'll walk to you 10 minutes to location during my lunch so you can take my picture and you will get something from it. It's incredible. You don't have to, and as I told the students and participants, you don't have to go to a model agency and hire a model. You can just go up on the street and say to somebody, you look amazing. This is a great background. Let me just do something special here. And they'll do it in London. So that's incredible. That's what keeps me going.
So you're motivated by that partly.
Definitely. I think the people thing. And I think it's a combination of the communication and the creative side of things. You can get creative, do your thing, but then you have that communication, that just wonderful thing going on that when you finish, it's, wow, that was great.
Mm. You've got the book coming out. What else? I mean, in a way, I think we've already really said it, but you're not, there's no rush and there's no need. You've already got your main living by doing the graphic design. What kind of clients do you work for?
All sorts. Corporate clients.
You were just freelance. Small. You were just self-employed.
I'm self-employed now. So I work for small companies, startup companies, little publishing companies, all sorts. Anybody who needs something done. Yeah. A lot of corporate clients, which are my bread and butter. I don't have a problem with it. It's interesting work and it's creative. But I think the photography is when it really gets creative, which is quite nice. I think you need that kind of, you know, to put this sort of, you know, lid on things and keep things kind of all right. And then the photography is when I can just go off and do my own thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I tend not to do as much. I've had offers from some of the clients, you know, can you do some corporate, you know, executive portraits, that sort of thing. And I just found it very dull. It's just not like photography to me. It's the only similarity is that you have a camera in your hand, but it's not photography to me.
Yeah.
Not in a snobbish way, but, you know.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, I just think, you know, you've created a situation where you don't have to do stuff, you know, which is really what we're all kind of aiming for.
Well, I mean, I think most photographers tend to do their bread and butter work all week and then their personal projects on the side. I just don't have to do those things during the week. I can do those, concentrate on the personal projects, which is great.
Yeah. Mm. Do you have a favorite? I suppose it must be Nickwith, but if it isn't, what is it? You have a favorite of your own?
The twins, I think we're all, you know, you always like your last picture, don't you?
Right.
You know,
the most recent one. Yeah.
Yeah, the most recent one. But I mean, Nickwith is a fave. But I've recently, on the front of my website, it's a woman, Jean Woods. It's a very old, older woman, about 80 years old.
Yep.
And that was actually a planned shoot. I actually met her, but she couldn't do it at the time. So I went to her house in Bath and shot around the Bath town center and photographed her. And that's an absolute favorite. Again, it kind of goes back to that Spencer Murphy thing where I saw his really desaturated work and wanted to do something that was a little bit less punchy on the color.
Mm.
So we, you know, photographed in the beautiful Bath sort of beige, creamy type walls. And she was wearing white. She's very gray hair. And it's a real kind of, it was different for me.
So
that's still my kind of current favorite.
Yeah.
And then the twins have been great. And I got a couple more shoots planned with a couple twins I've met. So,
great.
You know, all going well.
People can obviously find all these pictures that we've been talking about on your website, and I'll put that in the show notes. But, you know, if you've got, I guess, for people who want to do street portraiture, people like the ones that you had on your workshop, what would you be, you know, what's your main tips? Give me three.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's...
Top tips.
Top tips is, first of all, is keep things simple. I think the mistake a lot of photographers do, they come out with a massive, great big camera, huge telephoto lens. You don't need any of that. Like I said, if you didn't have to use the camera, it'd be even better, but you do. So a small camera, small DSLR, an iPhone, whatever, prime lens, that's all you really need. Second thing is, I think it's a communication thing. Be nice to people. You know, it's not difficult. Go up to somebody, tell them they look great, be honest with them, and it's plain sailing.
Mm.
And the third tip, smile a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, smile a lot.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and enjoy it.
Yeah,
if you enjoy
it,
they're going to enjoy it. And it's really that simple.
Right.
I think the greatest thing about the workshop was that we didn't need any frills. We didn't need any studio lighting. It was bring as little as you can. Because this is all about your mind, your communication, and a camera in your hand. Mm. If you got a big DSLR, leave it at home. Bring a small camera with you. Just get out in the street and meet people and take pictures. Mm. You know, it can be done.
Right, I'm going to face my fear of approaching strangers in the street. I'm going to
please do
take these tips on, Peter, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try it, and I'm going to let you know how it
went. Go on,
I'll post some.
It's getting a great area. There's some fantastic people. I saw them today. So
it's great. I think everyone, even if you're not into street photography or portrait photography or street portraits per se. I think it's just a great exercise for us all to do.
Yeah, you'll come away from it a different person, and that doesn't happen often in life, does it? So
absolutely not.
That's great.
No, I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you so much, Peter.
Absolutely,
great
my pleasure
to have you.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming, man.
Cheers.